Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Night Shadows. I'm Stuart Best. Where the paranormal is normal. Where that which you thought you knew, you didn't. And where the future can be known, if you know exactly where to look.
Well, good evening, everyone. Thanks for tuning in and listening. And we have a special show tonight. We've got Barry Rothman with us, a Torah code expert. And we've got Larry Taylor with us. And welcome, Barry. Glad you could make it.
It's always
and Larry, are you on with us?
Yes, I am, and so glad to have Barry on with us tonight.
Yeah, before we get into what Barry wants to do, can you give us a very brief update on what is going on in Louisville and maybe a heads up for everybody in all the cities from what we're gathering?
Well, I'll just condense it real quick. Of course, you know the situation, the Breonna Taylor situation in Louisville, Kentucky, and the verdicts came out today as far as the grand jury, and no one was indicted for murder, and more details did leak out that the police, when they went into the apartment, they were fired on, and they returned fire, and pretty much the protesters hit the streets as soon as this news came out. I'm noticing quite a bit of activity in Louisville tonight. It's 8 p.m. there as we start this show, and there's been some explosives go off and troubles and some arrested. The explosives basically at the present time appear to be fireworks, but there are reports that they've unloaded a U-Haul truck of a bunch of stuff for Antifa and Black Lives Matter, so we'll just see where this goes. Three other cities, I think it's Philadelphia and Washington, D.C., and one other that I didn't catch. So they're beginning what they call, according to Hal Turner and a few others, a nationwide protest for Breonna Taylor, and that's basically what they're calling it. I don't want to go into a lot of it, but I would just tell people this is kind of a heads up because it appears that the police are telling a lot of people, and especially large cities, to stay indoors and stay out of the way.
Probably a good advice. Before we get going here with Barry, he's got a PDF up, and you can find it on the blog talk description, the link to it. We also have the link up on Lightgate Blogger, and we also have it up on the membership site under radio shows for those of you who want to see the link of what Barry's talking about. I'm going to basically get out of the way and let Barry go with this. He's done a tremendous amount of work, and what he's really talking about is verified in many, many other places. So, Barry, help yourself, and we'll try and stay
okay.
Out of the way.
All right, I got a few stories you're going to have to bear with me over here, but in terms of talking about a lot of work, the first story that I'm going to talk about is going to be what happened to Adolf Hitler at the end of World War II. And I've been working on this story since 1981. So on and off, not continually. It can be a dangerous story to discuss. Hopefully I'll be okay, but, you know, You'll find out why I think it's dangerous in a little bit. Let me say as a prelude to that what I've been doing lately is reading a couple of books by Dr. Michael Salla, S-A-L-L-A.
Yes.
And the first book was The U.S. Navy's Secret Space Program and Nordic Extraterrestrial Alliance. Frankly, I discovered the book only by looking for a good picture to put in for one of my matrices, you know, that had to do with the Navy and the Nordics, or ETs. And then I ordered it, read it, and was amazed by it, and it changed a lot of my opinion. The second book was Antarctica's Hidden Secret, Corporate Foundations of Secret Space Programs, also by Dr. Michael Salla. It's book three of a series. I think he's got five in the series. So those are the two books I looked at. And sometimes you can't teach an old dog new tricks, but they also say if you haven't changed your mind about anything in the last 5 years, then check your pulse. So these two books have somewhat changed my mind. Now, as to what ETs and what UFOs are all about, and the way in which I've changed my mind was I've long heard stories that they were controlled by Nazis, and I dismissed them. After reading the two books here by Sala, I think there's something to it. And that does not mean every UFO is controlled by Germans or Nazis or whatever, but it does mean that they were involved with this kind of research a lot in World War II. I think everybody knows about Foo Fighters, that our bombers and our fighters encountered over Germany. And they never attacked us, but they would fly around us, buzz around us, and there was always a lot of questions about what exactly were the Germans doing, what were the Foo Fighters. So it kind of relates to that. Now, I guess I have to go back and look. If anybody's following has the PowerPoint up there, I'm going to start on the second paragraph shown on page 3 or slide 3. Back in 1981 is when I started my interest in what happened to Hitler. And the assumption was he died at the end of World War II. It was well known that the Russians looked at dental records and said, yeah, that's Hitler that died. But I heard once that there was a story where they checked on the dental records of the female corpse that was burned next to what was supposed to be his corpse, and the dental records did not match. So that was the beginning of my interest when I heard that. I was never able to find it again online or anything, but I did hear it on, I guess it was radio one time. So it was back in 1981. I was conducting a custody battle, and some of the aspects of the battle for my older son had to do with what happened in World War II. And before World War II. And so I was looking through the microfilm copies of the New York Times, and I came across an article dated April 27th, 1945. It was dated the 26th, but the article was out on the 27th. It was entitled "Hitler Imitator Reportedly Ready to Die in His Place." I followed the story via the New York Times out as far as 1949, which back then meant cranking through a lot of these huge tapes. And briefly, what they said was a former grocer whose name was August Wilhelm Bartholdi, B-A-R-T-H-O-L-D-I, was a duplicate of Hitler. And he was poised to die on the barricades while the real Hitler escaped. 2 days later, just after midnight on April 29th, 1945, Hitler married Eva Braun. Germany had time to prepare a Hitler swap, either by switching the dental records of Hitler for Bartholdi or drilling Bartholdi's mouth to match the dental work done in Hitler's. Mm-hmm. But they did not have time to properly prepare a duplicate for his bride. So the following day, on April 30th, 1945, Hitler supposedly committed suicide. Russian troops found two bodies burned beyond recognition. They were supposed to be Hitler and Eva Braun. Later we learned that there was a match for the dental records. And I mentioned here when I wrote about it that they could not initially confirm the female records over there. But I also heard back then it was not a match with Eva Braun. Now, this aspect of the story does not match what Wikipedia says, but I find mistakes in Wikipedia all the time. And Wikipedia is a highly prejudiced political publication.
Yep.
You almost never find anything that's going to be for Trump in there. It's always going to be for the other side. And they've been consistent this way for many years. It's a shame. They offer great service, but it's all scrubbed to only have propaganda in there. So they wrote that by the 11th of May, 1945, the Soviets had already had Hitler's dentist, Hugo Blaschke, and his dental technician confirmed the remains found were of Hitler's and also of Eva Braun's. But I have a question about that, a serious question about that, based on all the evidence. When the American troops entered Berlin, they questioned the Hitler staff. All except for two said that Hitler had died, but the New York Times reported that the maid and the chauffeur claimed it was the cook. However, as I recall, no name was given for the cook, and it was unclear whether or not he was Bartholdi that was mentioned earlier. By July of 1945, the New York Times was writing about unaccounted U-boats that might be carrying Hitler. And by August of 1945, there were stories of U-977 being searched by U.S. Marines in Buenos Aires, Argentina. It was a story also about people seeing what looked like Hitler and Eva Braun coming ashore from U-944 elsewhere in Argentina, with them heading for Patagonia in Argentina. On October 7, 1945, on page 10 of the New York Times, an article appeared saying, "Hitler believed alive, Eisenhower tells Dutch." Now, the New York Times might be garbage and fake news today, but when I grew up, and this was before, you know, they were taken over the way they were, the New York Times was almost like the Holy Grail, or it was, of newspapers. So if they said something, it was probably true. Now, Eisenhower never recanted a story. So the last we heard on the subject of Hitler by Eisenhower was he thinks he's alive. And October, you know, would have been 5 months after Hitler was supposed to be dead. Over the next 4 years, the Times covered a ruling that Hitler could not be proven dead for purposes of dividing his estate, and that a former Luftwaffe pilot, whose name was Peter Baumgart, had personally flown Hitler out of Berlin after he was reported to be dead. All of this only aroused my intellectual curiosity until I read a now defunct newspaper, the Miami Times. And it was about a U-boat convention, the Shark Hunters, they called themselves, at the Holiday Inn Hotel in Key Largo, Florida. I was only 25 miles from my home in Homestead, Florida. So I called the hotel and asked who was running the convention. The answer was, I thought, perfect. It wasn't a German. Rather, it was an American named, a historian named Harry Cooper. Now, in Antarctica's Hidden History over here, it mentions in Chapter 4, or Chapter 3, Harry Cooper, who wrote a book published in 2014, called Hitler in Argentina, The Documented Truth of Hitler's Escape from Berlin. So that man in 2014 was the guy I was talking to in 1981, I guess it was, over here, Harry Cooper. So that was the first thing I noticed in going through, the Sala book, that, yeah, that's a real historian. I've spoken to him. He was definitely involved with Hitler. Harry listened to the summary of my events, and promised to call me back later in the day if he could learn anything about the German submariners. Well, he didn't call to be back that day, and in fact, it was so long before he called me back, I forgot who he was. It was 2 months later, and after refreshing my memory, he informed me that he had learned that U-944 did indeed carry Hitler to Argentina. So this is a guy that's running a convention for U-boaters, you know, and he's telling me, yeah, Hitler went to Argentina and was on U-944. And he spoke to people at the convention that were on U-944. So that's where he got his information from. He put me on his mailing list, and I didn't appreciate that. I mean, I was a Coast Guard officer. I didn't like it because it was Nazi literature. It's coming to my home. I was worried that it might affect my security clearance. He also wanted me, and I'm Jewish, to join the group, the Shark Hunters. Then even better, he tried to convince me to travel to Argentina where he was going to dive at a U-boat wreck. Well, that was at a time that General Galtieri was running Argentina. And he was the guy in his head who was still fighting World War II, because he actually went to war, Galtieri did, with and lost to England when Argentina invaded the Falkland Islands on April 2nd, 1982. Argentina's nuclear power program was headed by Hitler's prime bomb maker. And, of course, the Israelis had found Adolf Eichmann, you know, the guy that was in charge of the Holocaust, hiding in Argentina. They captured him, they brought him back to Israel, they put him on trial, and they executed him. I believe he was the only man that Israel ever used capital punishment on. in its long history. And they're a year younger than me, so I guess it's 72 years. They only executed Eichmann. Although Harry Cooper is probably I wrote it at the time. Harry Cooper is probably no more than an ambitious historian. I figured it was probably best to judge him by his friends, and they were clearly German and possibly Nazi military guys. As such, I passed on the chance to learn more about his friends under the watch of General Galtieri. I thought it was not safe place for me as a Jew to go down to. So that's what I know initially. Now, back in 1982, I didn't have the Torah codes. And, you know, nobody knew about them. Basically, maybe some rabbi, a couple of rabbis, you know, had a tradition there was such a thing. Very briefly, for people who are listening to your show that don't know what the Torah codes are about, the first five books of the Bible is the Torah: Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. And in these first five books, there is a code which is supposedly, in a sense, like DNA, but it lays out the future history of the world in some detail. And, in fact, in enough detail that for at least the last 6 years, you know, I published an article about the Torah codes and matrices that, you know, I found every couple days normally. Sometimes it might be once a week or whatever. And my biggest reader is Fort Huachuca, which is an Army intelligence base in Arizona. And most of my readers, almost all of them, are military intelligence. So they know what the value is of what's here, and I think they know a lot more than that. But at any rate, what is the Torah code? Okay, so let's say that I want to look for Hitler. All right, I would specify a skip range to look for. So what's the skip range? A skip one would be like what you would see in the open text. You know, it's one letter follows the next on a line. And there's no skip there at all. Skip two would be every other letter. So you'd have, like the equivalent of H, you skip a space, and the I, which is a U in Hebrew, skip a space, a Tav or a Tet, for the T, skip a space, a Lama, and skip a space, a Resh. And that's it. Now, normally, the first term you look for is about eight letters. So Hitler's only five letters. So Hitler, unless I had Adolf encoded in a sequence with Hitler, I would not use as an axis term. Because if I did so, it would come up so frequently all over the place that it would take me forever to check them all, and they'd have low significance. But the first matrix I'm going to talk about, which is on slide one, the axis term is South America, or a transliteration of it. And so that's his skip minus 41,720. That means it's 41,720 letters from the first letter of South America to the second, from the second to the third, from third to the fourth, and so on. When that happens, South America lines up vertically. And if I look at Hitler, for Hitler as the first term, you know, that's a priori. In other words, I'm specifying ahead of time what do I want to see in association with South America. It also comes up at skip minus 41,720. So the two terms are parallel to each other in vertical. Hebrew is read from right to left. So right away, I'm seeing things that are supposed to be related going vertically instead of horizontally. This is how the code is largely constructed. If you're one skip off the axis term skip, you'll get a diagonal, but all the letters will touch each other. More than one letter off, and it won't be anything that looks that punches you in the eye in a sense when you look at it. You know, like, for instance, the word submarine is here. Zolelet. I'm sorry, this one is a different word. It's Timimi. A couple of words for a submarine. And it's a skip, not 41,720, but 41,716. So there's a four-letter difference, which means that every time you go down a line, the next letter of the word for submarine is four letters off from the vertical, and you get a diagonal like that. Now, a critical question crosses South America here in the open text. It goes right across it. No skips are required. The question is asked, the old man who you said, is he still alive? Okay, so here the question was, after World War II, was the old man still alive? The question goes across South America, which is encoded at the same skip as Hitler. And then we have the appearance of a submarine and a less significant skip on the matrix. So this is how codes are red. You usually have to have a few what I call special case skips there.
Mm-hmm.
And a special case skip is either going to be the skip of the axis term or the same skip but going the opposite way. So instead of forwards to backwards, backwards to forwards, but it's also going to be vertical when you line them up with no lines in between. Or a skip plus one or minus one. Those are special case skips. Most times these days, it wasn't like this originally before I knew what I was doing. Most times these days I try to look for matrices that are pretty much all the terms or almost all the terms are at special case skips. Because, like I say, you can see it. You lay it out on a table and it's all encoded, but you don't have to say, you know, where's the special message. It just hits you right there, whereas the diagonals and lines connect them and stuff like that, it really does not. So it's very easy for me to spot a counterfeit code versus a real one. All right, the next slide down, you know, here I've been looking, well, where did Hitler go? So, okay, we got newspaper stories he went to Argentina and went to Patagonia down there. So that's obviously the first thing we want to look for. And then, you know, I've been hearing stories for a long time about Nazis building huge bases down in Antarctica. I've even seen TV specials on about the U.S. Navy fought them in, like, 1947 with Admiral Byrd, who won the Congressional Medal of Honor at the head of the, as the main admiral that took the fleet down there, although he was retired. So there was another admiral with him, was, I guess, more technically in charge because of retirement. But, you know, Admiral Byrd went to the South Pole before, and he was famous for exploring down there and, you know, a hell of a guy. And so he goes down there and, you know, our Navy supposedly got its butt kicked down there, big time.
Yes, yeah.
Supposedly these craft came out, not in the sky. They came out from underwater. And, you know, there's such things as USOs, unidentified submerged objects, which are pretty much the same thing as UFOs, except the UFOs are in the sky. They have an apparent ability to go either way. And in fact, Salah takes it to such an extreme in the first book I read, with the U.S. Navy secret space programs and Nordic Extraterrestrial Alliance, he goes so far as to say, when we got the technology from the Nazis after the war, he says it was an anti-gravity technology. Now, I must say, in reading through both books, at no point did he make any effort, did the author make any effort to explain how the anti-gravity is achieved. But at any rate, the claim being there, he says in his book that when we wanted to make UFOs or make spaceships, the first thing we did was when we understood anti-gravity and how to construct that propulsion system, we used our own submarines, like nuclear submarines, or built other nuclear submarines, but except for one thing. They were built in like components, modules, whatever, and the aft component that was the nuclear propulsion plant before was taken out, and instead the anti-gravity unit was put in. So what he's saying is, and this is really weird, is that the U.S. Navy has large craft the size of submarines and a lot bigger. And sometimes he stretches the imagination a lot. But basically that we have flying around in space, we're so far advanced that, it's nothing like what people think.
Yep.
Another guy that was mentioned in this book was Clark McClellan, who I think just passed away. I could be wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But Clark, you worked at the Kennedy Space Center for, I think it was 34 years, and he got fired at some point. I think he spoke too much about what he was seeing with respect to UFOs and aliens and so forth. They fired him. They lost his retirement for him. He wound up on living with a Social Security payment a little over $1,000 a month and trying to survive by driving a school bus. He supposedly worked for the NSA before that time over there. And so his life became a living hell. I met him maybe four or five times. I interviewed him personally. Went to his home, saw that he had every astronaut that ever flew, had autographed pictures for him. He had a patch from every. While he was alive, I think he saw every launch that ever was manned that went up from. I live in Cape Canaveral, by the way, so he saw all of them that came up from here. He lived maybe 40 miles from here, but he told me about all these Nazis he was seeing over there. Now, of course, he was there when Wernher von Braun was there, and Wernher von Braun built our Apollo 5, our Saturn V rocket to take Apollo to the Apollos to the moon. So yep. He knew Wernher von Braun personally. He also says that there was a guy that was a horrendous Nazi war criminal, Kammler, he said his name was, and Kammler's mentioned in the book over here, that escaped at the end of World War II, was probably in charge of the Nazis' UFO program. And he says he saw him walking around at the Kennedy Space Center one day. At least he thinks that was who he saw. He recognized the man from a picture, and he had a German accent, and they were treating him with all this high respect. Clark, I had problems with him because he was kind of a Nazi sympathizer himself. He told me he would always click his heels at all these high German officers, Nazi officers that were working over there. And, you know, they came over in Operation Paperclip. We went at the end of World War II and collected all the Germans, scientists that we could, the best ones, and the Russians competed with us. This is in the book over here, in the Navy book. They got theirs. Our Germans were better than their Germans, so we got to the moon before. They never got there in terms of putting a cosmonaut down. So at any rate, he told me about all these Nazis, but this is discussed in Sala's book. Now, with all the wild claims that Sala makes, what gets to me personally is that so often I'm going through the pages of his book and it keeps coming up with people I know, you know, I have some experience with. So that, to me, gives him some credibility, whereas I mean, he documents stuff up the kazoo. He went through the Freedom of Information Act. I think he got 1,500 documents that were previously classified, and he shows them in the book. So, I mean, you've got a tremendous source here. If you're studying history, you want to know what was going on. He's got everything that he could possibly have there that way. Problem with the book, I thought, was that there are basically only two people who were eyewitnesses that he used for almost all his backing, not his backing, but his information. There was a guy named Good and another, William Tompkins. Tompkins supposedly was recruited by the aliens. He was a guy with a photographic memory. Brilliant guy, was recognized by the Navy as somebody that was so smart, didn't need a camera. The story goes that Tompkins was sent into Germany during World War II, and he was sent in as a spy. He was accepted by the Germans, and he worked where these UFOs were supposedly being developed along with aliens. Now, the aliens were supposedly largely reptilians, but some Nordics too. Nordics look like good guys, but they may not. They sound like they're really not if you get to know them from a lot of things. But at any rate, Tompkins had all these experiences, and so, yes, he's got all the rewards and recommendations and so forth after World War II to show that he did this tremendous work for a government in espionage. But it comes down to two people, so it's like you really trust those two people. And for me, the difference is, from another reader, is that so much of what I'm saying in the book, again, I've heard it before, I've seen it, I know the people involved, and that helps an awful lot. So the second matrix that I put up here, I could not find Fourth Reich encoded in Torah, but I did find encoded in Torah Reich 4. So what do I see when that pops up over here? I go and look for Hitler. There's two ways to spell Hitler. There's two T's in Hebrew. We have a Tet and we have a Tav. Convention is, if it's a modern name, didn't exist back in the time of Torah, when it was given like 3,300 years ago or recorded, convention is we use the Tet. This one has a Tav, but in terms of transliteration, they're read the same way. And it's the transliterations that count. If you can get a name into a transliteration, you know, from Hebrew that works, go for it, because you know in some cases some letters are so rare it would have limited the encoder's ability to put all the stuff down, because we could theoretically be talking here about everybody's life and all the details encoded if you know where to look. Uh-huh. So, but certainly every story that would make newspaper headlines. At least when newspapers were honest. And they make up all kinds of fiction right now, but and that's not going to be encoded unless it causes problems, like the illusion that, or hallucination that Trump was coordinating with Russians. So Hitler is there. He's not in a special case skip, but the last letter of Reich 4 and the last letter of Hitler are the same exact letter. So, and I don't mean just there, it's a race. I mean it's the same race. It's the same letter R. That's where they come together, and they come together, they're encoded together in a box that is 182 letters. It's 13 rows by 14 columns. Also in the same box is Bush. Bush is easy to find because it's only three letters. So it appears an awful lot. But I went looking for Bush because it's apparent from all the writings here, what I know about him previously, you know, he was the head of, this is Bush 1, head of the CIA for a while. Supposedly, Carter, when he was elected president, asked Bush, the CIA guy, head guy, what's the truth about UFOs and Roswell and stuff like that? To which Bush allegedly replied, you don't have a need to know. And so this was the Bushes. So Prescott Bush was a financier that was in close, and the book goes into this, the second book does, very close with Hitler and the Nazis.
Yep.
And did a lot of, you know, banking, a lot of the finances for the Nazis came from them, and there were other corporate heads, which is why the Antarctica book finishes off with corporate foundations of secret space programs. So the Bushes have long been kind of like in charge of the UFO cover-up in the United States. So Bush is, you got a Bush in there. It doesn't give the first name, so that's not that great. But it's skip minus one. If I expand the matrix out, then I see what? I see ICE at the same skip as Reich IV. Now, supposedly, the Nazis built these enormous bases in Antarctica. And what allowed them to build the bases underground was Antarctica, he's saying here, has more active, more volcanoes than anywhere in the world. You know, they're buried in many cases under miles of ice.
Uh-huh.
Where they are buried, the heat is sufficient to hollow out a cavern, a huge one, that you could put cities in. It shows one that says, like, illustrates one in the book that was large enough to put in Philadelphia many times over. So this is where they went, and the temperature in there was, I think, something like 72 degrees Fahrenheit, so pleasant temperature. And, you know, they just bring in their power sources, and they could even use geothermal, I guess, and be good to go for a long time. To get to these cabins, you have to take a submarine, and Sal describes huge submarines that were not like regular submarines in that they had flat decks on top. They were designed to carry containers. And so if you knew where the entrance was, and supposedly the aliens gave them the maps where the entrances were, then you had a big submarine and with all kinds of freight and cargo, whatever, you know, technical stuff and living and stuff you need to live, and sail under the ice and get to the cavern and then, you know, submerge and build yourself a city or whatever you wanted to build. And it would be virtually an impregnable fortress. There is mention, I think, at one point of the attempt to take these out with nuclear weapons. But they were so far down, it's not clear that whether they succeeded or not in getting them. It just depends on, the power of the weapon. You know, is there any ability to penetrate before it goes off or whatever?
Uh-huh.
Unless they could get there under the ice by a waterway. So he's got on there ice at the same skip. Now, so that's a special case term. He also has, this is in that 182 letters with Reich IV and Bush, is UFO at the same skip as Reich IV. So that's there. The bigger matrix that I show is 875 letters, and that has some of this other stuff in there, including a term, all that come to the military, drive out nations greater and mightier than you, which the U.S. would have been after World War II. And, you know, supposedly Hitler was able, or the Germans down there were able to take us on, especially that battle group that had Admiral Byrd up at the top of it. There's another admirals involved. And it's all listed on my site on an article, Hitler and the Fourth Reich. There's a term reptilian that's here. It's not a special case skip, though. Supposedly the reptilians helped the Nazis down there. There's also, what else over here? I guess that's about it. There's mention of the military, all that go out to the military. And supposedly there were two groups Salas says that went down to the Antarctic to set up research facilities, both from Germany. One of them was led by a Nordic alien, and her name was Orsic, Maria Orsic. She was supposed to be relatively peaceful. She was just interested in research and didn't want to hurt anybody. But the other group was headed by the SS and worked with the reptilians, supposedly, and that was the one that was interested in building weapons. Now, there are pictures. One was in the book that I put on my site. That, let me see in terms of what slide that is, of Hitler after he survived the war. There's a picture of him. I guess it's on slide 8. With where he went in South America. Later on, he went to a place called Tunja in Colombia. On that, I went looking for that matrix also. And I want to know, was there anything that says in Torah that Hitler went to Colombia? So, yeah, Colombia is encoded at skip 27,698. Well, so is Hitler. Same exact skip. And the town of Tunja at skip -1 is between them. So, you know, the letters are all together there. That's a special case skip. This is in 345 letters. Odds against having Tunja, Colombia, and Hitler in that box at all the special case skips, 8,702 to 1. 8,702 to 1. Now, on that one, where I show that above it, I show some documents that were secret, that have been declassified, and they come from, one of them comes from the chief of base, this is, I guess, State Department, in Maracaibo. That talks about Hitler being seen in Tunja, Colombia. Then that one was dated October 17th, 1955, 10 years after Hitler supposedly dead. There is a response that it was issued on November 4th, 1955. This is to the chief of station in Bogota from... I guess this was somebody at the White House. When I'm looking at what it says, headquarters has no objections to stations passing this information to somebody named Girella, G-I-R-E-L-L-A, but it's felt that enormous efforts could be expended on this matter with remote possibility of establishing anything concrete. Therefore, we suggest that this matter be dropped. So then they talk about what to do if they want to go any further than that. But basically, the State Department was saying back off. And, you know, that doesn't surprise me somehow too much, given the way things were. So I've kind of dumped a lot on you without any questions. So before I go on with the rest of this PowerPoint, it's 8:38 or so. What do you have any questions, either of you?
Larry. Not really. All of that lines up pretty good, and I've looked at the codes that you're referring to, and they seem to really just enhance the data, basically, and put it out there. So no questions. Go ahead and continue.
Okay. All right. Now, so we know that Hitler was alive at least until 1955. If our own State Department sources are correct, the picture is right, it's encoded in Torah. And, you know, here, for a very long time, I'm wondering why in the world does Fort Huachuca have to come to my site every few minutes for the last 6 years? And I'm not exaggerating too much when I say that. It's certainly here every single day. And it can be up to 100 times a day if I'm doing something really interesting. I was never a believer in remote viewing. There was a big program for that was headed by Hal Putoff at Stanford. Now, Hal was nominated for the Nobel Prize. I have spoken with Hal Putoff also. So I'm very familiar with his research. A good friend of mine, C.B. Scott Jones, introduced me to him. And this guy also mentions another fellow, Colonel John Alexander, that was big on that and big on brainwashing people, or, you know, having stuff broadcast into their heads so that they think of the way the government wants you to think. So at any rate, Butov was big on anti-gravity. He was big on remote viewing. But I think that the military is looking at me, even though I don't, this is not what I call it as a kind of a remote viewer. Now, I can't do what Butov's guys were supposed to be able to do. He's in the book here, where Butov is mentioned, it's alleged that they have one guy they were studying that if you gave him coordinates on Mars, not only could he see what was there, in the case, of course, they're going to be looking for the Cydonia area where that famous face is, and there's supposedly pyramids nearby on Mars. But he said, okay, what was happening there a million years ago? And this guy allegedly can go back and tell you what the civilization was like back at that time, what it was doing. I think they'd look at what I'm doing as something similar, but it really is not, because in that case, the guy is just pulling this stuff out of his own brain or his own psychic abilities. In my case, I'm just, looking for terms that naturally relate, and then I simply search the codes and see, is there a skip in an ELS, an equal to letter sequence, or is it not? If it's there, what terms should be associated with it? If I can find them, are they significant? Are they not significant statistically? The three-letter words are usually not. If they're seven- or eight-letter words, in association with the axis term, that's usually eight letters, or can be up to 10 or 11 maybe. I don't see too much longer than that ever. Then they're very significant. It just depends on the letter frequency. So I'm doing math, but I think they see it in the same way as kind of a remote viewing. But, there's definite methodology. It's on my site. I would assume that if there's anybody on this planet that can do this stuff as well as I can, they're sitting listening to our conversation in Fort Huachuca right now. I've offered, for a price of $2.2 million, to actually combine what I do with artificial intelligence, to have my son work on that, Dr. Robert Haralick, who right now is the head of the computer science graduate division at City University in New York. He used to be the head of the one at University of Washington. So he's a mathematician, and the guy who's the code guru that put together the code finder software I use is Kevin Akers in Australia. We would have to buy the source code from him, and that's maybe $100,000. But Haralick put together the cost estimate. He thought it was $2.2 million in order to hire at least one other PhD up there at Sydney University of New York. And he wants four or five graduate students and a couple undergrad students to go along with it. And, so then we need travel expenses and stuff like that. He also wants control or use of the computer, supercomputers over at Brookhaven National Laboratory. Brookhaven's an interesting place. Why? Well, two things. Number one with Brookhaven. Number one is they've achieved the highest temperature ever on Earth. I think it was several trillion degrees. It's on my site somewhere. The other thing is that for a long time when they were going on to surf what was out there, they were logging into the reverse IP of my website or my modem over here. And I chided them about that because it looked like they're spying on me constantly. I know that Fort Huachuca controls the host for my site. I know that because every time I tried to buy another host, put my site elsewhere, and I did it a couple of times. Every time I did it, they gave me an IP address that went right back into Fort Huachuca when I checked with the IP searcher, address searcher. So anyway, I was going to mention something about Eisenhower. So here we know that in 45, November 45, he comes out and he says he thinks Hitler's still alive. We don't hear anything from him about that again. Never recants it. So now 10 years later in 55, according to Salah's books, and I've heard this before, allegedly, a UFO lands at, I guess it's Holloman Air Force Base. That's New Mexico. And President Eisenhower meets with, it was supposed to be an ET. But the claim is made here that who we met with in one of the UFOs was actually a German officer. And he was a little surprised to hear, high German being used and so forth. True or not, I don't know. That's what's here. Eisenhower's last words in office on January 17th, 1960, have always been fascinated by. It's kind of an enigma or whatever, but he stupefied the world when he said the last thing he said before leaving office as president about the military-industrial complex.
Uh-huh.
He said, now this conjunction of an immense military establishment and a large arms industry is new in the American experience. The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We recognize the imperative need for this development, yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. Our toil, resources, and livelihood are all involved. So is the very structure of our society. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. And I think what he meant specifically was not even the death of Adolf Hitler. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge, huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper forever, together, rather. So that's what he said. And nobody
yep.
ever knew why he did that. What was he so afraid of? I mean, he was commander of all our allied forces in World War II, and yet he goes out of office as president warning about the government. The next president who came in, who apparently wanted to release the truth, didn't fare so well. That's a very, very sensitive subject. I'll let you read, you know, Salas' books, and there's stuff that's written out there about it. But all I'll say is the first time I ever had any questions about that, back in 1999, I wrote an email to some of my Torah Code's fellow researchers about it and what I had found, and a threatening phone call was received by the wife of the main addressee within 2 or 3 minutes. All of us had the same computer software in terms of protection from viruses and intruders. It was called the Zone Alarm. Everyone's alarm went off at the same time, showing that we were all being hacked into. Now, back then it was a hack into. Right now it's their kids' fraud. I mean, they could have pulled me off by now. I don't know. We could find out later on. Everybody, things go silent. But, you know, in terms of the power here, the question is, it's enormous. The implications of Adolf Hitler possibly surviving World War II and being allowed to build up a new secret force that would infiltrate our government, I mean, it's mind-blowing. I mean, we know. Every time we look at a Saturn V and we feel proud, and I can't wait to see, you know, we're going to launch in a couple of years from here a man and a woman up to the moon, and it'll be right out my front door. This whole place, the whole condo I live in, every time a large rocket like that goes off, any rocket goes off, especially that, I mean, things are shaking inside. I mean, probably for a rocket that big, might be a danger of us breaking some dishes or some glasses or something just from the shaking of the place or that close. But every time we look at a Saturn V, movie or whatever, we're looking at something that was built by a Nazi and by lots of Nazi scientists.
Yep,
and we put
right.
them here in the Kennedy Space Center, and we put them throughout our, you know, military-industrial complex. And a lot of them got to be very powerful, and I'm sure many of them worked their way up politically. And all the war crimes they committed were forgotten about. You know, so then we find a friend like Clark McClellan walking around him and flicking his heels to him years later and giving Nazi salutes and telling me, oh, he's so excited he met Kammler.
Hey, Barry, I've got a question.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't want to pull you off of your direction, but something that I just thought of was, I know you've, and General Milley is very relevant right now with our time frame and our present Trump administration. And I wanted to ask you, when he was talking about, and I believe it was to the Air Force Academy, and he mentioned that they would be fighting little green men. Well, was that a code, or was he really telling them something there or telling the world something.
Well, that made headlines, of course, the front page of the Army Times. And the excuse was used that the hybrids were not only regular troops, but were also criminals and terrorists. And the little green men supposedly referred to, you know, Russian soldiers in green uniforms, not aliens. That's the overt excuse. I have a matrix up about that. I have a number of matrices about General Milley. I'm following him very closely. Now, I must say, in return, he follows me too. Once, only once, but it was enough to get my attention. I got an invitation on Facebook to be a friend from General Milley. And what did it say? It didn't say, hi, I want to be your friend. It was the exact words of the abstract of the report, the 1,200-page report that I published with my son, Dr. David Rothman, who has a PhD in physics. This is published with the Mars Society right now. It was the exact abstract for it, word for word, talking about why. Well, the name of the report is Mars Correct: Critique of All NASA Mars Weather Data. I can show it's all fraud, all of it. And so,
yep.
And I do in 1,200 pages. And so, what he sent me back was that abstract, which sums up why. You know, you can tell, but you know, I've got such enormous data that relates to Mars. Now, a lot of people are sitting out there, how can I possibly know that the Mars weather data is wrong? Well, I can know because when they publish things, normally, if it's pressure data, there is a curve that they will stick to. It's a double hump curve. And it's almost identical from one Martian year to the next, which is like 669 days. You come to the same point, the same, you know, in the orbit a year later, they're trying to tell you it's the same exact pressure within a millibar, so less than a millibar. You know, it's exactly the same. And there's going to be things happening from one year to another. They're going to be different. And the temperatures pretty much stay exactly the same. There's more variation there. But if suddenly they go for a week and the pressures are 100 times more, or even 10% more than they should be, and they drop back down again, when I see that, okay, I post it on my website. I've got all, you know, all the smartest weather data for every day. Now it's 2,800, and I think we're almost up to 2,900 sols or Martian days right now that I have the data for, which is, I guess we started back in 2006, so here we are in 2012. So here we are 8 years later. I got every day's worth of data up there. So if they change it, if there's something absurd, I do a print screen, publish it, point out on the tables why that looks wrong, why it's so much out of line with what's been there before. And then I always have published a prediction, watch the government change it. And sure enough, they'll go into my website, they will see highlighted in colors, you know, in red or whatever, the fact that data didn't fit in with what's there before, and then they will change it so that it's right on that curve, that expected curve. And then when they do that, I get another print screen and put it up. And what I can demonstrate, and do demonstrate, is that a lot of the final Martian weather that's offered to the Earth doesn't come from Mars. It comes from basically from my condo here in Cape Canaveral. And they've looked at it and they said, ooh, we've got to change it to what Rothman says, and they go out and change it. So when Milley sends me a Facebook request and he just publishes the abstract and puts that on there and nothing else, it's a way of saying, hey, nice going. I'm aware of what you're doing over here. Hang in there. One day you'll tell you the truth. And disclosure's coming, I'm sure. Maybe the election will help it come along a little faster because things are getting to a point right now where they're just intolerable. And we're probably, you know, it's just a matter of politically, when is the best time to do it? And the fact that so many people have done so much it's illegal, you know, that I think it's like the Kennedy assassinations. They said, what, 75 years they wanted the autopsy classified. So by that time they figure everybody's dead and they won't have to worry about going to prison, then they can let us know what actually happened. It's kind of like that. But Millie, yeah, that's what he was talking about. I think in terms of what he really believed, yeah, he's encoded with a lot of alien stuff and a lot of other stuff. I hope he turns out to be okay. Obviously, I was very disappointed with General Mattis and General Kelly. You know, I had assumed always that our generals would be good guys. It turns out that we have a problem with our system, and the problem is that we don't promote the best people. We promote the people that are politically correct. They have to go before Congress to get approved, and so it's all a matter of politics, and there's a huge amount of money with the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned us about. And so who's going to play the game the right way versus who's the best to defend the country? So I have articles up in there about whether Milley will stay with Trump if we go to martial law. Will he enforce that? What will he do to keep the government right over here? And after seeing Mattis and Kelly do what they did, which was just about treasonable in my eyes, I hope that General Milley's okay. I got concerned with the way he had apologized for going across the street with the president at that church. I was in the military for 24 years in the Coast Guard Reserve, 10 years in the Navy Reserve, did a total during that time, about 15 years active duty, the rest was reserve time. And I know we're not supposed to be political, but darn it, right now we're in an age, we're looking at the overthrow of the government of the United States, the Democrats more and more telling us that's what they want to do. Tear down the entire AOC. She wants to tear down the entire system. And why she's controlling things, I have no idea at all. She's an absolute dingbat, moron. And yet, you know, she has so much power. Pelosi wasted our time for, 3 years with this Trump illusion, with the collusion.
Yeah.
I mean, absolute nonsense. It was nothing to it. And then she's got the latest remark out of Pelosi is she can impeach the president every day on something. She finds something new every day. What is she doing running a branch of our government or, you know, being the Speaker of the House in such close succession to the presidency? That's what we got out there. These people, they don't have the foggiest notion of what America's about or patriotism or anything else. And when I look at what's discussed in these books, especially in the Antarctica book, where he talks about the Fourth Reich and the control that Hitler got in our government, you know, after the war. And I look at a Pelosi or some of the other people over there. It's just the question has been for a number of years. I've written articles about: are these people brainwashed? Are they implanted? Are they what is it? How can they be so far off? Because you know, I voted 12 times for president of the United States. And in those 12, 6 were for Democrats and 6 were for Republicans. Every year, you know, people would always look to the center, and we would hear the arguments from both sides. Every year I would look at that and see which one was the best one and make my pick until about, the time Obama got in. And by the time he got in, it was so apparent that there was something radically wrong. And then it just went to the absolute extreme. So the people say this, you know, your daddy's Democratic Party is not the Democratic Party of today. It's true. And say for those that don't believe me, I know the show's coming to an end. Those that don't believe me, you got to wake up and realize, you know, we're going to lose this country and soon rather than later if we don't fix what's going on. But we have to understand the nature of the enemy. And what I have up here starts to point some shots or some lines to where that enemy is and what is the
well,
truth.
We're going to have Barry on next week
can we get you back? I'll call you on Monday and make sure we can get you back for another hour. We got to close down here in about 40 seconds. So,
all right, God willing.
Yeah.
Stay healthy, everybody.
Okay, well, thanks an awful lot for coming on. I'll give you a call on Monday, and we'll set something up if we can for Wednesday. And thanks, Larry, for coming on. Boy, there's a lot of stuff going on in the Fourth Reich and the technology. And I've seen some of that technology when I was an aviator for General Electric and other companies. Anyway, thanks a lot, Barry, for coming on. Thanks, Larry.
God bless you and your audience.
Low yep,
Republic,
take care.
Everybody.
Okay. Good night.
Night.